Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for July 6th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Not too much. Enjoying the evening, getting ready for the World Cup, Women's World Cup extravaganza in the morning, and ready to talk about some baseball.
So yeah, you know, I don't usually get excited about soccer, but I'm really going to be looking forward to this game. We're going to be posting probably around halftime, so then I'll concentrate on the second half, and I'm hoping the United States, as you can see from my shirt, no one else can see, but you can see.
I can see.
And I've got the U.S. flag on one side, and
what's that H there?
That's just Tommy Hilfiger. He's going to be good for America, too.
I thought that was I thought Freeman might have given you that shirt. I got to take a picture of this.
No screenshots, please. No screenshots, please. All right, on this week's show, we've got a chat with Alex Ramirez, who's back in MPB with Oryx. And we're going to talk about MVP candidates and more listener questions. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, I had the good fortune to go out and talk to a man who needs really no introduction, but if I didn't introduce him, that would be a poor start to the show. So I had a chat with Alex.
You won't get fired, that's for sure.
I feel much comfort from your saying that.
Thanks. Good.
So anyway, I went out to Chiba Marine, the stadium that was formerly known as Chiba Marine Stadium, where Alex Ramirez was in an Oryx Buffaloes uniform.
Wow.
Talking with the hitters, talking with the coaches, posing for the cameras, even doing a little rummy dance. You know, he's got it all going. We talked about a whole slew of things, and particularly his job and what's going on with him regarding baseball. So let's hear what he had to say. Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is, jack of all trades, man about Japan, Alex Ramirez. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. It's been a while.
Yes, I know, right?
I know, since about 2000.
Yes. But I'm happy to be here now. So.
Yeah, we're happy to see you in uniform here with the Oryx Buffaloes. Now, what is your job in English? What's your job title?
Actually, my job title is a roving advisor.
Okay.
You know, meaning that I just kind of advise the Ichigun team and the Nigun team.
Okay.
And I'm like behind the scene.
Okay.
And try to work with the coaching staff.
Okay.
You know, give them advice, and then, you know, from there we go and, you know, give advice to the players.
Okay. Primarily the hitters, I suppose.
Yes, but, you know, hitters, of course, but also pitchers and catchers and anybody who is willing to, you know, to have my advice, I'd be more than happy. Yes.
Okay. So, you know, when you were with Yokohama, I know you enjoyed talking with a lot of the young players, and I know from them talking to me, they love to hear from you. But that can be a problem in Japan, because people's roles are very strict. People's roles can be strict, and people can get really upset. And so tell me a little bit about what's the difference now and what's the difference then.
When I was with Yokohama, I had a really good time, and I always say that they have a very good talent. And I was able to help some of the players, especially Susugo and Ichikawa, the captain, and some of the other players that they're really good. But I was a player when I was there. And then there's always, of course, the hitting coach, and that's why the hitting coach is there.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to go there and try to help one of the players, and then the hitting coach is going to teach something different, is not very good.
Okay.
So I had to step out. That was not my business, basically.
Okay.
You know, I was just a player, and the hitting coach, that was the hitting coach job.
Eventually, they had you step out all the way to Yokosuka.
Yes. All right. So, you know, and then after that, you know, being here with this organization now, it gives me the opportunity to talk to the hitting coach, and together we can go and talk to the players.
Okay.
And not only the hitters, but also the pitchers and position players. They can come to me and they can ask me any questions about the game, and I'm I can give them my advice.
So when you're sitting behind the batting cage, I know you were doing this yesterday because my colleague was reporting on it, and so you're talking, watching the batter with the batting coach, and talking about what do you see, what are we seeing, the same thing kind of converse dialogue.
Well, basically, yesterday, you know, the hitting coach was behind the net. Uh-huh. I was working with some of the other guys, uh-huh, like Tio Okada and okay, Collano, basically, after that, you know, we talked and I said, you know, I think that we should work on this with Tio Okada and some of the other players, and he also agreed. So today, when we get together, and then together we're gonna go and talk to them personally, mm-hmm, and say, hey, you know, we need to work on these things
with Okada,
Tio Okada and also Collano and some of the other players.
Was Okada was something like how he was striding or something?
Yes, Tio Okada, he has a really good power, but the way he positioned himself is a little bit off, and he's, you know, out of balance.
Okay,
and that's where his power is. You know, he cannot hit the ball opposite field with power, you know, as before. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because, first of all, he's way too far from home plate, mm, and the way he's, you know, positioning himself is not the same. So okay, I was trying to help him into, you know, get close to the plate and put yourself in a good position, good balance, and try to pull a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to push the bat, try to pull a okay, little bit more. So, I mean, he understood and he was very happy. He asked me a couple questions, especially running and scoring position. How do you do in those kind of situations, you know?
Oh, that's you could write an encyclopedia on that stuff.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to you know, to tell him. And, you know, he seems to understand and hopefully he can put it in play. But that's the difference, that now my position, I have a better position, that I'm able to talk to the players more, mm, and they're going to listen to me, and I don't have to worry about that, you know, I'm yeah, overstepping anybody's boundaries.
Don't step on nobody's toes.
No.
Well, your feet aren't nearly as big as mine, so you shouldn't have too much trouble. Now, tell me about your time in the Independent League, because it's getting a lot of news this year. Now, I'm going to get this, Joe Germin.
Yes.
Chavez.
Yes.
He's the fourth player this year to sign from the Independent League for this season, mm-hmm, and from the BC, the Baseball Challenge League. Now that league has taken off, and it's also really high profile this year. I mean, what do you, as a, just from somebody who played there and coached there and was involved in the Guma Pegasus, how does it feel when somebody like Julio Franco comes and Tuffy Rhodes comes and your old teammate Akinori Iwamura with Fukushima? Mm-hmm. And these guys are getting signed. It must be very exciting.
It is very exciting. And you know what? The thing is that now you see that league, the BC League, as the way in, mm-hmm, to the MPB.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys that, you know, they think they have no chance. They go there to maintain and get the opportunity to come back to the MPB. And which is a great opportunity. I always say that ever since I joined the BC League, I saw so many players with good talent,
mm-hmm,
but I never saw scouts there.
Ah, okay.
So I was wondering why the scouts are not coming here to see these players,
mm,
you know. But now, you know, this year, it's just been unbelievable. I mean, each game is like, you know, almost 5 to 6 scouts, different organizations. So that alone is very good. And another thing is the teams are realizing that, you know, going to United States in the middle of the season,
mm,
to get a player for $500,000, $1 million, and they come here and it's not working because it's hard to come, mm, in the middle of the season, right, and produce. They're realizing that why not go to the BC League, get these players that already been working and playing here, know the Japanese pitching,
sure,
and they're already ready to go, and for a lot less money.
Yeah,
you know, so I think those things are very important, you know, for those players and the organizations.
Okay. Now, for years, we've talked about your desire to manage. And do you still have that ambition to manage in Japan?
Oh, of course. But, you know, that's something that, you know, right now, you know, this is my job right now. And I'm focused, you know, 100% on what I'm doing right now. I'm loving it. And I'm pretty sure in the future, when the time comes, when the time is right, I'm really sure that I'm going to be there and I'm going to be ready to go.
Well, we know you're going to be in Japan.
Yes, I will be here. So.
Have you got your permanent residence yet?
Not yet, but we're working on it.
Good.
So, you know, it also, you know, works. You know, my wife is Japanese, so it shouldn't be any problem. So.
Oh, we can say that now.
Oh, yes, we can.
Oh, okay. Say it. I was sworn to secrecy last time.
No.
Okay, so you've got, it's a really a nice revival story for you. I know Guma's a little far from Tokyo, but, you know, you're going to be here in the limelight a little bit, and I think you're going to have a lot of fun because this team, let me ask a little bit about a couple of the players here.
Yes.
Because, and also I want to go back in time a little bit to Yoshitomo Tsutsugo. Mm-hmm. What do you see this year that you saw maybe a couple of years ago when you were with him at the Bay Stars? Because he's come into his own.
Well, you know, the thing that I see about Tsutsugo this year is confidence.
Okay.
You know, in the past, Tsutsugo was the kind of player that, you know, if he go 0-10, 0-12, he will get sent down to the minor leagues.
Okay.
You know, and you know, that was not the kind of player he is. Mm-hmm. He's the kind of player he needs to play every single day.
Okay.
I mean,
because of his size lack of experience.
No, it's just because of his. This guy has a great potential to become one of the best players in Japan.
Okay.
You're talking about Hideki Matsui, the next Hideki Matsui.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of potential Tsutsugo has.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the past, for some reason, I don't know if the organization or the managers would send him down just because he was young and, you know, not mature. And so, you know, I don't know the reason, but the thing is, you know, I think that the best thing would have been let him play, let him become the players that they expect him to be right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have been that player from three years ago,
okay.
You know. So now he feels that I'm the man now.
Yeah.
You know, when I work with him down in when I was there in DNA, he would always tell me, Ramichan, I know I can hit, but it's kind of hard to be there and go 0-10 and the whole time you're thinking I'm gonna get sent down.
Mm.
That's not a good feeling.
That's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. So now, you know, I always told him, you know, your time will come.
Mm.
You just keep it up. Just keep working hard. Keep getting stronger, and just keep studying. Write things down. Very important.
Mm.
And he's the man now. He's
yeah.
the player. So,
okay.
You know, DNA Basers, Tsutsugo. That's him. He's the man there.
Well, you got a couple of guys down there.
Couple guys.
Kajitani's pretty special player.
Kajitani's very special. Kajitani's very special player. I mean, I see Kajitani hitting 300.
Yeah.
I mean, for many years in a
sure.
row. I mean, you're talking about these guys, unbelievable.
Speed and arm
yeah,
and
speed,
the whole package.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, let's talk about Oryx now. Just from working with the players for one day, what did you learn yesterday, or what have you learned from watching Oryx since you've been talking about this job, since you started thinking, you know, now you're looking at Oryx as a profession as opposed to, you know, just sort of, you know, what are they doing?
Yeah. Well, I was about 70% of Oryx games because Caraballo and
right.
Michael were here, so I was very interested in watching the games. Now that I'm here and I can see, you know, the atmosphere and everything, and of course, there's a lot of things to be done.
Mm.
You know, we're not going to change overnight. But, you know, we got to take it day by day. We got a couple of players that, you know, just because they were struggling, you know, at some point randomly in the middle of the season, and then they're not, you know, hitting in the position that they feel that they should be hitting.
Mm.
So that's more mental than anything else.
Okay.
You know, so hopefully those guys can come back and say, you know what, I don't care where I hit. I just want to help the team, you know, and those things are very important. We have the potential to be an A class team,
sure,
in the Pacific League.
Well, I think you guys the offensive talent on this team is pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive, and I know the thing that a lot of people don't see is a lot of these players they got hurt early in the season, so now they're coming back. You know, and it's not easy to produce right away after coming back from injury.
Mm.
So I think those guys are going to start producing in the second half of the season.
Now, one of the issues that one guy who used to play for Oryx told me was he felt there was kind of a lack of energy from some of the kind of established players were like taking things for granted and, you know, we're losing and we're a little out of rhythm. Would you agree with that?
Well, I mean, right now, I mean, it just I only been here one day, so I don't know.
You should know one day. You should know it all, man.
It was only practice, a couple guys, so I don't know. I don't know yet.
You haven't been watching that carefully.
No. Okay. Ask me the same question about a month from now, and I'll probably tell you. But the thing is that we cannot worry about being in the last place. Okay, we have to take it day by day.
Sure.
And it's still got 70 something games left, and you never know what's gonna happen. Okay. Right? I with the team we have, I strongly believe that we can turn it around.
Sure.
So on my side, I'm gonna try to do my best to help these players mentally more than anything, and see how far we can go.
Yeah, it's to get them to relax a little, man.
Well, that's part of the game, But games is you have to relax and play the game. So hopefully, I can also bring some of that to the team.
I mean, you can even sing for them.
Of course, I can sing, I can dance, I can do a lot of stuff for them.
All right, bud. Okay, thanks so much for
being
with us.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you again, Alex. And it was great to talk to you.
Thanks a lot, Big Al. I'll be looking forward to seeing you soon, buddy.
Big Al, yes. So, what'd you think?
Matt, I'm going to use one of your favorite words, and it's particularly appropriate since soccer, we're talking about Women's World Cup. It was brilliant. Everything about it. I mean, I'm glad you cleared that up, because I couldn't imagine as an advisor he'd be issued a uniform with a number and everything. I thought he was going to have a suit. So, it's really interesting that he's got the uniform, too.
I don't know if he had a number, because he was wearing a warm-up jacket.
Oh, well, get him to...
Or maybe I wasn't paying attention, which is probably the far more likely possibility of those two.
But, one of the reasons I've always said that you can learn so much about hitting with just 5 minutes of talking to Alex Ramirez is just what you heard in that interview, because you think you've got impressions of some hitters, even in MPB or even in the major leagues, but you talk hitting with this guy, you're going to learn a lot more. You're going to be able to add on to what you already know. So just the way he talked about Takahiro Okada and how he's standing too far from the plate, which I kind of understand. I mean, when I was playing baseball, I didn't like the ball inside.
You didn't like the idea of getting hit with a ball?
No, I didn't like pitches on the inside half. I wanted the ball away. And so I stood off the plate. So I'm just thinking, why doesn't, what is that? And it was so funny because today, in today's game on Sunday, I saw Takahiro Okada, T. Okada, they've been calling him since, even though the manager Okada is gone. I saw him standing closer to the plate and he got hit. He got hit by a pitch on
Thanks
the
Thanks a lot.
Hashtag high heat.
But, I understand that approach and I understand it. And, comparing Yoshitomo Tsutsugo of the Bay Stars to Hideki Matsui was a real shock. And it just brought me back to the story that he and I had, or this discussion that he had.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 2010, and Hayato Sakamoto hit a bunch of home runs. And I think he was past 30 and he was approaching 40. And I said, every time I saw Sakamoto, I would say, 40 home runs, 40 home runs. And then I talked to Alex about it. I said, man, I think he's the perfect number three hitter. He'll be the perfect number three hitter in the future. And Alex said, no. And I said, why? I said, he's got power. He can hit for average. And Alex stopped me in the middle. He says, no, whenever he tries to hit for a lot of power, his average goes down. And he tries to do too much with pitches, and he ends up doing nothing with them. And so flash forward to now. Sakamoto is hitting in the cleanup spot for the Giants, but he's not really hitting that well, not hitting for a really high average. So I think, Alex, he obviously he knows the hitting part, but he knows batters too. So for him to compare Tsutsugo to Hideki Matsui, at first, my first thought is no way. But I guess, we have to wait and see.
I see some things that are similar. For the first part, their size. Well, Tsutsugo is actually bigger than Matsui.
He's bigger than Matsui, yeah. And Matsui was a better athlete in terms of speed and running and all that stuff. But
agreed. Matsui could play center field in Shigeo Nagajima's imagination.
Hashtag
and,
Well, he was playing it in his lineup, too.
Yeah, don't get me started on that one. But yeah, I hear you. So I think for me, one of the things that struck me is that, couple of things. One is that the Bay Stars actually were very happy to have him giving advice when he arrived. It was like part of the deal. You come in, we want you to be like a coach, he said to me. And then it, but you know, until it was like until people started listening to him.
Uh-huh.
And then they were like,
where'd you get that?
Well, we can't have that.
Yeah.
We can't have people actually listening to the foreign guy. And it's interesting. It was interesting for me to hear his view from a more distant and more calm perspective.
Uh-huh.
About his time with the Bay Stars and talking to the hitters,
mm-hmm.
which is, that was not my business.
That was not my business. Yeah, I found that comment interesting. But, of course, you know, and I don't think, I just kind of think that relationship with Rami-chan and Kiyoshi Nakahata, the manager, just kind of disintegrated as it went on.
I think it disintegrated. I think it tracked his batting average. When he stopped hitting, they stopped wanting him to have anything to do with anybody.
Yeah.
They, and that's why I mentioned that, you know, eventually the way they got him to stop talking to people was to exile him to Yokosuka.
Mm.
So anyway, going on with back with the Bay Stars, talking about Tsutsugo and letting him grow into a job, it reminded me something, not that Alex told me, but it reminded me something of what a few people have told me, and most recently Takayuki Onishi, who is the outfield coach.
Outfield coach with the Giants.
He is indeed.
Yeah.
And that last year I spoke to him regarding Itaru Hashimoto,
mm-hmm.
who's a very good hitter, very good outfielder, you know, who's trapped into the Giants outfield of, you know, eight guys who sort of rotate around and play and sub and squeak and do all kinds of different things except play every day.
Right, the stupid human tricks in their off time.
Exactly, pretty much. Anyway, what Onishi told me was the essential difference between a first-team player and a really good minor league hitter
mm-hmm.
is the knowledge that he will not get sent down for failing a few times.
Uh-huh.
So we were talking about, you know, I was asking him what adjustments do guys need to make in particularly Hashimoto, and he said he didn't have to make any adjustments. Really, he could do everything he needed to do. You know, he had some things he had to see, but the big issue is knowing you're not going to get fired if you strike out.
Yeah.
And he said that without that, players tend to adopt tactics that will minimize failure,
right?
Instead of maximizing success,
right?
So some of that is from the team, and some of that is from the player. You know, having the self belief that it doesn't matter if I strike out now because I know what I'm doing, and that's very hard. If you know, it's hard to think you know what you're doing when if you know what you're doing, and the next call you get is to the manager's office saying, report, you know, stay in Yokosuka tomorrow. We don't want you.
Right.
So that was kind of interesting to me. I guess the other thing was that when I asked him, what do you think's wrong with Oryx? First of all, what do you think about Oryx? And he says, well, I watched him very carefully. I watched 70% of the games because of Caraballo.
Right.
Who was his guy, you know, he worked with last year, as we spoke about before on the show. And there's a lot of things to be done. And then when I said, what are they? He said, well, how should I know? I just got here.
Well, I think, you know, and I heard that comment, but I think he might know what's wrong, but he might not know exactly why it's wrong. And he might not know how to go about fixing it. And then again, he can't be giving away company secrets either. Right.
So, yeah. Oh, you mean that kind of knowledge? Oh, no. So yeah. Anyway, there may have been a little bit of miscommunication there, which, you know, it happens. English is not his native language, although regardless of how good it is. Now, the other thing, which was interesting, because Jason Cosby of the Japan Times was there.
What's up, Jay?
Right? And I wrote, we both wrote stories on Alex Ramirez, and, well, people saw his. So, anyway, Jason was of the opinion that Oryx was pursuing Ramirez to be the next manager,
which
I thought was interesting. It hadn't quite occurred to me. And the reason it hadn't occurred to me is because the head of the team right now is Ryuzo Setoyama.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does anybody out there remember what happened Okay, does anybody remember what happened the last time Yuzo Setoyama's team had a foreign manager? Well, he basically...
Hey,
yeah, that's right. Are you still here? He basically threw the season in the dumpster in his effort to get rid of the manager.
Who was Bobby Valentine.
Yeah. Right. He basically said, he did everything he could to keep the team from winning to drive the manager nuts. It was like a movie script. It was like something you'd see in Hollywood. It was very much. In fact, I think what happened was he was probably, this happened after the 2008 season. And it was probably at that point where he was looking around for ideas to get rid of Valentine. And you watch the movie Major League, in which the owner tries to throw games.
Right. Right.
And so he probably thought, what a brilliant idea. Let's get the owner on board, which he did. And they essentially tried to lose games. That's exactly what they did. Well, I mean, it's like they took it out of a Hollywood script. It was not exactly like Major League, but it was essentially they tried to lose games. They did everything they could in their power to lose games. So anyway, that's what happened the last time he had a foreign manager. So I'm thinking no, but on the other hand, there's always the possibility that it could be that Setoyama sees Ramirez as somebody who's really deep into Japan, which he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's married a Japanese woman. He's working on being here. His future is here. And somebody who can't really afford to talk back.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no doubt that he's going to manage in Japan at some point in NPB, I should say. And I think it's going to be sooner than later. I don't know that I'm comfortable, maybe as comfortable in going to Oryx. But hey, look, you got to get a start. You got to get a foot in the
True
door and maybe he can make some changes. And I'm sure, with his knowledge of how to hit, and I've told you before on the show, and he talked about it too, how he tried to set up a pitcher when he was in the batter's box and play the cat and mouse game with them, that he can tell the pitchers exactly what the batters are thinking by their approaches and the plate and what they do, whatever adjustments they make. So I think he can make a pitching staff better. I think he can make the hitters better. I'm not sure what he's going to do with the defense, but I'm sure he knows good defense when he sees it, because he said Inaba was a really good player when he was on the team with the SWAT,
I might like to see him as a head coach.
So, I'd like to see get the more experience. But you know what? If they're ready to make him a manager, I'm ready to see it. Because you've got to get experience first. So,
sure.
Whether he's good or not, we'll see.
And he's older than every other manager in NPP, perhaps. So.
Just about, yeah. A lot of the first-year guys, for sure.
Well, okay, not the Oryx guy now, because I know Fukuro was playing back in when I was starting out. He was a veteran.
Right. And I also love what he said about the scouts at the Indy League games, you can get players who know Japanese pitching. They're already here in Japan. They're cheaper and they're capable. And more than that, they're ready to go.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're in the independent league now. I mean, if you look at the BC League, their rosters are stacked with foreigners. Now, it didn't used to be that way. Of course, Oryx started that with Caraballo and with Alessandro Maestri.
Mm-hmm.
But now you look at the BC League and most of the teams, I think an exception is the Musashino, the one that's closest in Saitama.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them are just packed with foreigners who are waiting to get a chance to play in NPB. And I think that's where I have to go and talk to the people who run the BC League and see if their business model has changed, because I'm guessing it has.
Mm, yeah, that'd be an interesting story that I hope to see.
Luck with that.
All right, so let's talk about Oryx for a little bit now. You know, they lost their game today. And like I said, before we started taping, Ace Chihiro Kaneko didn't look so sharp. But they don't seem to be meshing the way I would like to see them mesh under the interim manager, Junichi Fukuda. And he tried different things, and, they're searching and they're groping, but I don't think they're getting any better. And I don't think Tony Blanco came back, and, they've just been blah. They still don't know what to do with the lineup. They still don't know what to do with the defense, where to put people, who to pitch and when. And it just looks like a mess.
A couple of things about that. One is just what the Buffaloes needed, three more injuries.
Yeah.
So Yoshio Itoi is out with ankle and elbow issues.
My man!
And he had a knee problem before, so Itoi is out, and Tsukahara, the reliever, which is, okay, he's all right, but he's no big shakes. And Nishino, the rookie Masahiro, second baseman, who is good, he's out as well for a month. So it's like it couldn't get worse. And then Blanco's back, but he didn't start today. Instead of having Blanco in the lineup, they had nobody, or I should say not nobody, but Shuhei Kojima, who is an improvement over nobody because he can catch throws to first base then better than having nobody there.
I would think so.
But that was that. I looked at his minor league numbers. I looked at his major league numbers, and I thought he's not a big difference from nobody. So Blanco's on the bench for nobody means he's not doing well. He's not 100% neither. Well, he did come back and get a hit, but so yeah, things are not looking up for Oryx.
Yeah, and you know, the starting pitching has been iffy, the bullpen has been shaky, the run production has been spotty. The defense has been okay, but not great. But I mean, other than that, they're fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at the beginning of the season, they were actually, things were looking up. I mean, they were essentially identical to the Carp in the sense that they were, nothing was really wrong. They just weren't winning.
Mm-hmm.
But things have gotten worse since then, not better. I guess one of the things I liked about today's game was bringing in rookie Sachio Yamasaki in long relief, because I think that's really what he needs, and he looked comfortable.
Yeah, because I saw him, I mean, you know, I remember his first start was against the Lions at Sabre Dome. And he didn't look very comfortable on the mound. He didn't look very cozy at all. And they punished him. They ended up winning that game. But yeah, I liked the way you know, come to think of it, the fact that you said the word comfortable. That's what it looked like to me. He looked like a guy who just came back from the minors and thought, well, I know I don't belong in the minors, so I just have to go out and do my thing here, and I'll be able to stay.
Yeah, he was in a position where he couldn't lose if he execute. You know, if he executed his pitches and missed or got hit. Or he didn't miss by much and got hit. It was no skin off anybody's nose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what he really needs, is to get into that where he's just, you know, this is a big situation. Not a big situation for me, but this is, you know, this is all about what I can do and, you know, and do my best. And because he's got the stuff. I like his pitches. It's a consistency issue. I think probably a confidence issue. There may be some mechanical things going on there. But anyway, I don't know the details, but I did like seeing him bring him in long relief, which is a great thing to do when your starting pitcher has to be, you know, taken off the field with a sponge.
Yeah, you need to ease him along, though. But I think he did look overwhelmed early on, but he didn't look that way today. So I think that's a good way to describe it. And, you know, again, going back to Ramichan, I think it's going to be hard to quantify, but I think he can help even guys like Yamasaki. I think, you know, when Nishino comes back, even Adachi, and the guys he needs to really help in that, if he can make an impact with these guys, it'll turn that team around. It's the guys like Nishino who actually was hitting really well before he left, but he can make him even better. And then the shortstop, Ryoichi, Adachi, and then Shunta Goto, Hikaru Ito, those guys, if they can pick up their numbers, get on base a little bit more often, that's going to push this team up in the standings, because the other guys are hitting and they're going to do their thing and they're going to do what they do. But if there's nobody on base, it's not going to make a big impact. But if he can,
I think those guys are all good players. And,
yeah, they're all good.
I think so much of what has gone wrong with Oryx has been, well, the high expectations connected with the big season last year from Kaneko and the big acquisitions. And then Kaneko goes south and doesn't show up, and then Itoi's hurt, and Itoi doesn't play well, and it was like dominoes falling, and they're still falling.
Yeah, for Itoi, it was more not playing well, and now he's not showing up because he's injured.
But I think he was injured too.
Yeah,
yeah, I was at a game in Chiba where he was hurt, and then the next day he was on the DH, and I've watched him play in the outfield enough to know he wasn't close to 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting to balls, I'm going, he made a good run for it, but it's off the end of his glove. I'm thinking that ain't the norm.
All right, well, that's good. Good luck to Rami-chan. Thanks a lot, buddy, and I hope to see you soon. And we'll expect a few more wins from the Oryx Buffaloes, and I can't wait to see him in uniform. Let's make a transition into talking about the leading MVP candidates since we're halfway through the season, and we've had some good performances so far. We're in the midst of a record performance, it looks like, with Shogo Akiyama with the Cebu Lions. But I just wanted to get your take on candidates for MVP. Now, I've got my PL list, which I'm going to shoot out first, and then you tell me what you think. I'm going to put...
No, not him. Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. You shoot it out first, and then I tell you what I think. Okay, go ahead. I got that order mixed up.
You take your bat and start swinging after I throw the pitch.
Hashtag high heat.
Okay. I didn't want to waste time, man.
Yeah, sure, but you're going to strike out if you do.
You think so.
All right, so Yuki Yanagita of the SoftBank Hawks I got up there. Shogo Akiyama, obviously, he's really making a difference in wins and losses for the Lions because he's getting on base so much. Shohei Ohtani with the Fighters, I think just because he's winning so much as a pitcher, he's not doing very much as a batter, but what he's doing on the mound is the stuff made of MVPs. And Takuya Nakamura of the Lions. I like him. And then I would probably give, at this point right now, an honorable mention to Nobuhiro Matsuda of the Hawks.
Okay, now I had a shorter list than you did. I hear what you're saying. And my number one guy on the list is Yanagita.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a 1.109 OPS.
Yeah, I mean, he's one on my list.
Okay.
You have no argument here.
I have no argument.
Probably we have totally different reasons, but, you know.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I give him, you know, I discount the fact that he's, you know, playing in the auction house.
And the basket case.
Like. I don't know where did the expression basket home run come from? Because it's not like a basket. It's like they've got a section. They've got seats.
I saw it in some Japanese story somewhere, so
baskets,
but I don't like it either. I just threw
okay
that into, yeah.
Okay, they got the home
I'm
run terrace
terrace yes
I'm calling terraces
yeah.
Okay, and then Okwari-kun, who's a 960 right now, but I'll tell you, I don't keep them very far apart because I think Nakamura's defense is pretty good, and Yanagita's is not great for a center fielder. It's good enough.
Yeah.
But third baseman, center field, I'm going to give more credit to the third baseman. And he's also playing in Cebu. So I think they're very close. I think Yanagita's ahead, but not by much. Now, if Ohtani, well, you know how I am about pitchers.
I know, and I don't like it either, but you know what?
Okay, we'll play that game for a second. We'll just talk about who would win as opposed to who. Those are the guys who I think should win.
Right.
Now, I would put Ohtani in the category of people I think should win if he, you know, continues to pitch like he does. He goes something like 18-2, and he hits maybe 10 home runs. You know, with a, you know, 250 batting average.
He's got to go wild to do all that. But, yeah, okay. All right.
Well, he could. 250 is not far. The thing is, the reason is he doesn't have a lot of at-bats this
year.
Yeah. So, you know, if things square away for him, then yes. Then absolutely. Do I think he would be deserving? Yes. Okay. He'd be up there.
All right.
But if he just goes 18-5, well, if he goes 18-5, it's going to be the MVP. Now, unless – the problem is Akiyama, who is not at this stage really – who's not a real MVP candidate.
No.
He's a candidate of people who are infatuated with numbers as opposed to what the numbers mean.
Yeah. And you know me, yeah. I like the power and all that other stuff. But what he's doing is he's getting on – remember I said being an RBI is really important because that's how you win games, you know, scoring runs.
Yeah, but he doesn't get on base as much as Yanagita does.
Yeah, I looked at his on-base percentage, and it's really low for a guy
who's
almost hitting 400.
He's done – basically, his season is really interesting. I don't get into too much detail. I'm working on a long story on this. But basically, he's stopped drawing walks.
And he stopped really hitting for power, right? You see his swing, too. No, he's really not swinging.
He's hitting, well, that being said – probably by next week he'll exceed his career high in doubles.
Yeah.
He's hitting tons, scads of doubles, which is, so his power is actually it's down, but it's not down by a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, his swing looks a little bit different for me because he's swinging to get singles.
I don't see it.
I'm not saying he's slapping, but yeah, he just looks like he's changed.
He's made some adjustments, but I haven't made up my mind on which of those two I expect to do the better. And I'll tell you why briefly is that Yanagita is a first half hitter.
Uh huh.
I mean, his OPS first half and second half is pretty noticeable.
Okay.
Akiyama isn't. He's pretty much balanced. Okay. However, he's so far ahead of his norm right now in every respect that I don't expect to keep it up. And the other thing I noticed tonight when I was looking is I looked to see how they've hit against the best pitchers in Japan.
Uh-huh.
And Akiyama, he's not hitting badly, but there's a huge gap. Basically, he's gotten his hits off the worst pitchers.
Okay. All right.
And Yanagita doesn't suffer from that. So what I'm thinking is, yeah, some better adjustments by the pitchers, some better pitching, and he ain't going to make it. I think he's a candidate to break Merton's record, but I would be surprised if he does.
All right. Now, in the Central League, you go first and give me your top guys.
Central League right now, I got.
It's hard,
guys.
Isn't it? Isn't it hard? It's really hard.
It is hard. It's petrified, baby.
Usually, when I give you an assignment, which I learned not to do anymore, but I figured this one was pretty.
Because I talk back to you?
No, because you don't do them.
Hashtag high heat.
But I figured this one was pretty easy for you, so this was a pretty easy one.
Well, I dig this stuff, so.
Yes, I knew that.
Okay, so yeah, give me the assignments I like to do, and there's your answer. Okay,
you got two guys.
I got two guys, and they are Tetsuto Yamada.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's pretty obvious he's leading the Central League in OPS. Now, of course, he's got the other thing going, which is pretty good defense, and you know, that's on his favor. His defense has dramatically improved from a year ago, and the other one is Yoshitomo Tsutsugu. Who doesn't play a lot of defense. He's a shade behind him. They're both playing in hitters' parks. Okay, Yakult's a little more favorable than Yokohama, but not a lot. But the defense, to me, that's the difference. I don't see anybody who's even close to those two guys.
Okay.
I mean, the next guy on the list would be Hatakeyama, and that's, you know, Tsutsugo minus something or other. He's not as good a hitter as Tsutsugo.
Or plus a few pounds or something, but yeah.
And he's got the beard too, so. Yeah.
Well, I have Hatakeyama high on my list because his production, and you know me, I like wins, so his production seems to help them win games. The same with Tsutsugo. I had them like right together, close, like two peas in a pod here. Tsutsugo obviously not playing the great defense because he just doesn't have the speed. It's not that he doesn't work. He just doesn't have the speed. He doesn't really have an arm. But, you know, Hatakeyama doesn't have
plays first base
much going on the defensive side. Yeah.
You can't give a guy playing, you know, credit for being an ordinary first baseman. I mean, you barely can give a guy credit for being a good first baseman.
But I also had Shintaro Fujinami of the Tigers on my list, and that's today he struck out double digits. I can't remember if it was 12 or more. I'll look it up as we speak here. But, you know, he's won six consecutive on the mound, and he took over, he came up big, let's say, when Randy Messenger was sent down to the minors and had his little situation going with the team. So he stepped up in a big spot for them, and 12 strikeouts for Fujinami. So I like what he's doing in terms of leadership on the team, and that counts for me in terms of getting wins, and obviously he's winning some games. And then I also threw in an honorable mention for Ryosuke Kikuchi of the Hiroshima Carp. Even though he's not having a great season with the bat, he's doing so much on the defensive end that I think it's going to get overlooked. And I just wanted him to have an honorable mention.
Well, you know, I'm really glad that people put a high value on Kikuchi's defense, as I do. But it's bizarre that, I don't know, Japanese people, Japanese baseball people are like, when everybody, it's okay to give somebody credit for their defense if everyone's talking about it. So it's like he plays defense and nobody else does. And I'm mystified that people can think Kikuchi's a better player this year than Yamada. Okay, great. He's a one of a kind. I guess that bit of being a one of a kind. Kikuchi's a guy who I think we both agree would be a Golden Glove second baseman in the majors. But they don't have Golden Glove. So we think we see that, and he's an exceptional talent. And I think there's another comment about that coming momentarily. But he's an exceptional talent, and so we want to value that. But people who do everything else right, who aren't, you know, that extra step ahead, and that it does have value being exceptional. But Yamada's so much more an exceptionally good hitter.
Well, yeah.
It's just silly. It's silly to put those two guys and say, well, we should make him first because he's an unusual talent. You know, that's almost the Shohei Ohtani for president kind of thing. Except what they do with Shohei Ohtani is says, oh, he's a really good hitter, but let's discount that because he's not a position player. And he's a really good pitcher, but let's discount that because he's a part-time pitcher. You know, and it's like that, and that's what they do, you know, for individual awards. He ain't going to win it unless it's an MVP.
Right.
And so with Kikuchi, that spectacular defense allows people to ignore everything else. It was Valentin's 60 home runs. Well, he hit 60 home runs. He must be the MVP.
Mm.
You know, it's like, well, yeah, of course, without really thinking it through. And I think that's what they do, is they see the amazing numbers and they go, wow, what amazing numbers. Or what? And in Kikuchi's case, what amazing plays. And I'm all with the amazing play bit.
Okay.
But don't let it blind you to everything else.
I gotcha. All right, so
my rant is over.
Well, your rant is just going on here. We got to cut you off. we got to make a seamless transition into some more notes now. So the players added Shinosuke Abe, the catcher for the Yomiuri Giants, and he on Tuesday hit his 350th home run, and he's the 28th player to do so.
And the third catcher.
All right. And then they also added Jose Lopez of the Bay Stars and then Yuhei Takai of the Swallows. And then on the Pacific League side, Ikuhiro Kiyota of the Lotte Marines was added.
Yep.
But then later in the week, we got an addition by Tatsunori Hara, who's going to manage the Central League team. And he added one of his players from his Giants team, a guy many few people even know his first name, Takahiro Suzuki. And this was very odd, and it prompted me to go on the Facebook page and ask the question, how do you think Hara will be able to justify putting this guy on the team and skipping or snubbing or shoving aside the accomplishments of Hatakeyama of the Swallows? I was interested in what you thought.
Well, I thought that it was interesting, and of course, part of the discussion, at least on the Japanese side, and Hara said, I wanted a balanced team. Okay. Now, in that sense, I understand. Now, what he had was the fans voted who I thought should have been the all-star catcher, who was Tsubasa Aizawa of the Carp. The fans voted him in, which is I thought was the best choice. And then the players voted in Shinosuke Abe, who's plays half the time at first, and he catches when they don't have anybody else, which is often. Now, Hara, I'm thinking because Hara is Abe's manager, and he doesn't want him catching at all if he can help it.
Rest
he wants his
knees.
Bat to get healthy. Yeah, he wants his bat to be healthy.
Right.
So you don't want Abe to catch. So he has to bring in another catcher as a backup, who is
Nakamura.
Yes, Nakamura of the Swallows.
Another Yuhei.
Yep. Okay, thank you. And so he's left with a situation. He's got few people to choose from, and now he's got also three first basemen because he's got Abe and Lopez and Arai. So Hatakeyama, the Central League leader in RBIs and home runs, is out. And so he says, well, I need, you know, obviously, I need team speed. So I need team speed, and maybe I need something more in the outfield. I got a ton of infielders. So he goes and picks Takahiro Suzuki of his team, a guy who's
he does nothing.
He has eight at bats this year.
And he hit a home run. So I mean he's got a home run in one of those. But he does nothing.
He's a pinch runner. And a defensive replacement.
Yeah. He's a designated fly ball shagger in batting practice. I mean, that's about all he does.
Why didn't Hara, you know, take the Giants bat boy and put him on the roster?
Hashtag high heat.
I don't get it. I thought it was very offensive to the rest of the league.
I hear you. And you know who he snubbed? And not Hatakeyama, because I understand that dynamic. He had a ton of first basemen, and I think Hatakeyama is deserving, but that's just the way it is.
He might have gotten numbered out a little bit, but you still got to put him on the team for all that. You know,
I think the guy is, if that's what you need, you don't pick if you decide for balance.
It's an all-star game. You don't need anything.
Yes, but let's say you're trying to win. And I understand. I think he's trying to win. But if you want balance, if you want speed and defense, and you know, a guy can give you that, you pick Yohioshima of the Dragon, who was the fourth. He was the fourth choice in the fans' ballot. He was the fourth choice in the players' ballot.
And guess what? He can actually play. He can hit.
He's a good base stealer. He's a tremendous base runner. He's a great outfielder.
Look, there's no justification for Hara to make
picking
this
Suzuki
pick.
Is doing what you do in Japan, which is you take care of the people in your group first, and pardon the French, screw everybody else.
Hara's
being a company man.
He dropped his pants to the ground and he screwed.
He said, kiss my butt, baby, because I'm going to pick my guy who's not worthy.
The only thing that I can hope for is that Hatakeyama plays a role somehow, whether it's in the postseason or in the regular season, of stopping the Giants and turning and doing an Andrew Jones at the dugout at Hara. For snubbing him for this, because I think it's really offensive.
Yoshima too. I think both of those guys. I'd like to see the Dragons Swallows kick the Giants' butts.
Yeah.
You know,
and they deserve it too.
They
it's
do.
It's an all-star game. For goodness' sake.
So Hara deserves to get his butt kicked for that. And the Japanese media is sucking up to him. They're going, oh yes, all right, balanced, of course. I mean, like, give me a break. I mean, okay, look, it is an all-star game and it is an exhibition. But if you're gonna do it, do it. If you're a fan and you're not interested, don't vote. Nobody cares. But if you're going to be the manager, then be the manager and don't be a doofus.
Yeah.
And Hara's being a doofus.
Yeah, try not.
And I like Tatsunori Hara, but he's being a doofus.
All right.
You can tell him I said that.
I think he listens to the program. I think we're good. All right, on to June's top performers, and let's play.
And I got to park and ask him and see what he says. Okay. I know he'll have a big smile on his face when he says it, though. He'll go, oh, yes, it's for Japanese baseball. It's the way we think. I'm going to go.
Are you still talking about the previous topic?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I'm annoyed, man.
I feel your pain. I feel your anger. But we got to move on. We got to play your other favorite game. pick the top performers of the month.
You're a man after my own heart,
man. I'm just pushing all the buttons tonight. All right.
Oh, you are indeed.
So Shogo Akiyama set a club record for the highest batting average in a month with a .448 clip. And you know, he scored a bunch of runs, blah, 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 blah. Who's the guy who's going to be the top performer of June, Jim?
Well, you know, if you ask me,
The top batter in the Pacific League, to be specific.
Okay, yep. The raw numbers favor Yanagita, but you know what?
Yes, I do know.
There's not a huge gap between them, and I'm inclined, because Yanagita plays in the auction house, to, you know, say Akiyama's my guy.
He's going to get it? Okay, I'm going to go with him, too. What about pitchers in the Pacific League?
The Pacific League pitcher is easy. It's going to be Shota Takeda. 3-1, 1.00 ERA, 25 strikeouts and 27 innings pitched.
All right. What about the Central League? Who's going to be the top batter?
Hatakeyama.
Yeah, I'm
easy.
With you there.
And second would be Yamada, but that they're not close unless you actually think defense has any value anywhere.
Oh, no. Not in this.
And we don't go there with this award, so sorry.
Not at all. No problem. All right, and that's pitcher. Fine.
No, this is a tough choice. We've got Fujinami.
That's who I'm going with.
Yeah, we got two, and it's interesting. Fujinami's 3-0, but and here's the thing, because I was talking about this on Twitter. You know, it's 90% about wins for starting pitchers. 3-0, 33 strikeouts in 26 and two-thirds innings. You got to love that. 2.7 ERA. Now, the competition is Miles Michaelis. 3-1. However, two of those were shutouts, which they also like.
Yes, they do like the shutouts.
And a 1.16 ERA, which they also like, and respectable 23 Ks in more innings. So I see those two as being pretty much a wash, and it's going to be interesting. The two shutouts is pretty big. They might balance that, but I think not. I think they'll go, 3-0, we got our man.
Okay. Yeah, I think they're going to go with Fujinami too, but we'll see.
And all I think that's it. So the two tough choices for the CL pitcher and the PL hitter, and then a couple of easy ones.
All right. So let's go to fielding questions. All right. This one comes from at Graveyard Ball and came to us via Twitter. So it's a high heat question. And he says, who do you consider the best and worst setup / closer tandems right now among the 12 teams? So first of all, I looked at the question and I think it's a little bit flawed because the worst setup guy and closer get bumped out of the role. So they're not around.
Yeah,
not
that's
around.
What I think. And then you get a kind of a cloud competition there where people are shuttling in and out. Yeah,
right.
Agreed.
So I think what he means is the most and least effective guys who are out there. And so I think it was a thinly veiled attempt to get us to talk about the Lions on the show, which is okay because the Lions deserve some props. They're doing really well. And we want people to contribute to the show. So that being said, I think if I were a Japanese reporter, I would just look at the saves and I'd look at the holds and I'd add them together and I'd say, oh, it's Tomomi Takahashi, the closer for the Lions, and Tatsushi Masuda, the setup guy. And I'm like, and then I'd be done with it. But that's not how I think. And you know what I like in the bullpen. I like guys who throw hard, strike guys out, get the game over with. And
those are the guys all reporters. Like, yeah,
get it over with quick. Get out of here. And so for me,
who do you like?
The guys who have, and what I did was I went and looked at the strikeouts per nine, and then the WHIP. So that means they're
whip
not
it good.
They're not letting guys get on base, and they're striking guys out. So they're not putting a lot of pressure on the defense. And the two guys I have are Dennis Sarfate, and I know he's not pitching right now at the moment, but Edison Barrios of the Hawks. I think those two guys have really done a great job, especially with their lead. You know, Dennis was leading MPB, all the relievers in MPB, in K per nine innings. And I also like Logan Andrasek and Tony Barnett of the Swallows. They were combining to do a really good job of keeping guys off base and then striking guys out. But I would put the Lions tandem third.
Well, I think it's an interesting question because we have a lot of really intriguing candidates.
Mm-hmm. We do.
And
none
I'll tell
of
you
them
mine.
With the Carp and none of them with the Dragons. And none of them with the Giants.
I thought the Dragons might be. I thought those two from last year might be, but they haven't really gelled.
Yeah.
The second year has been a tough one for Fukutani and Matayoshi, who were dynamite middle relief last year in setup as the setup guy, setup pair, I guess. But and I liked all the guys you like. The Hawks one is up and down too, and Barrios was good enough that they picked him for the All Star team, although his manager picked him. So,
well, that doesn't count.
It really, as we know, it really don't count.
Hotter's going to do what he's going to do, then you just throw that one in the trash.
Right. Yeah, I was surprised he didn't pick somebody off the Hawks minor league team just to get even with the Giants.
Hashtag high.
So anyway, the guys I picked as my favorites, and not any statistical analysis bit for this, is Tanaka and Yamasaki, the Bay Stars.
Yeah, and I think it's been mostly Yamasaki because Tanaka has been up and down in terms of moved up and down. He had an injury and they dropped him down. He just came back up recently, so yeah.
But he's also the substitute closer, I like that. I like that, and I like the Lions. I like Yeah, the Fighters are in a couple of teams in disarray. The Eagles had somebody, the Fighters might be the bottom of that group, or it might be the Giants, or it might be the Barb.
I would also say this because he hasn't blown a save yet. I think Yuki Matsui, anybody who can get the ball to Yuki Matsui.
He blew a save yesterday.
No, he blew a game yesterday. He did not blow the save. They lost the game. Nope. It was in extra innings. He came in a tie game.
Okay, it was tied, so he blew the game.
So he hasn't blown a save yet, and I think he's only given up 3 runs this year. And one of them, you know, if you look at the one that he gave up on Saturday, it was a foul tip swing the umpire claimed, and then a dunking, sinking line drive that the outfield decided he was going to dive at and let it go by him for a triple instead of playing it on a bounce for a single. But anyway, he gave up the run. So, but anybody who's really been getting the ball to him, that situation's been good there. But they just can't get the ball to the ninth inning sometimes. So they're struggling. But yeah, good question.
Anyhow, it was a good question. Mm.
All right, the next is a comment that came from Steven on the Facebook page. And he said, my son has recently become a baseball fanatic, so being able to listen to your podcast is helpful to stay up with the sport. So I'm assuming he lives somewhere in Japan. I do have to take exception to your discussion about the Central League. This was from last week's show. And the question you posed, parity versus mediocrity, was a false dichotomy. Parity means equality. Teams can be equally good or bad in a league. Therefore,
or equally mediocre, as he said.
Therefore, there can be parity and also mediocrity. In my opinion, the teams in the CL are all mediocre, resulting in parity in the league, which is why the absolute worst team in the PL can thump the best team in the CL. I was at the Oryx 15-1 drubbing of the Tigers, he said. So I felt the pain and the anger of paying a ticket to see an absolute, you know, butt-whipping in a boring game, and I understand that, but I don't think you can. First of all, thank you very much for the comment, and I commented right back to him on the homepage. And I see the point, and I guess we can throw out our discussion from last week. It was all garbage, but that's fine. But my point is the gap between the best team and the worst team has closed probably in the past 2 seasons. It shrunk for 2014, and it has shrunk to just about nothing in 2015. And that's introspective of good or bad baseball, and that's a level playing field for me. So I do remind you, though, because it does sound like you had a bitter experience at that game, that one blowout doesn't really mean that much. And again, Oryx did that. They swept that series, I think, and that got them to 8-10 against the Central League. So they still walked away with a losing record. So it was just a couple bad days for the Tigers, not anything to get excited about.
I'm with you. I mean, I had this essentially the same issue with the question. I thought it was sort of a, you know, is a league weak is always hard to tell. Are they bad? Are they mediocre? Well, every league has a 500 record against itself, so you know it's the same every year. We do know about the Pacific League's advantages, and it's pretty well documented. I did do a story which didn't run anywhere on Friday, because every Central League team was below 500, which probably has never happened in the history of baseball, because they have I think that requires 3 things. 1, league, which is generally better than the other.
Mm-hmm.
2, a small league,
right,
in which a bizarre almost zero distribution, you know, nothing like a random normal distribution, nothing like a bell curve, which we usually see,
right,
but all the teams close to the mean.
Mm-hmm.
So we need a small league, and then we need just that bizarre distribution to occur. So all those 3 things happened on Friday.
Perfect storm. Yeah.
And it was a perfect storm. So, but I think the point of that is kind of interesting. And I'm surprised, and I saw watching the TV yesterday, everybody was saying, they weren't saying every Central League team is below 500. They weren't making a big deal about that on the Central League broadcast. They were saying every Central League team is close to, or 5 Central League teams are within half a game.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going, you're missing the point. The point is they're lousy. You should know they're lousy. I mean, it's so obvious that they're lousy. But they just refuse to say we are lousy. And I want to mention that Shohei Tateyama of the Swallows, who did come back this past week, said something to me 2 years ago when we were talking about his 3 years ago. We were talking about his success in Interleague, and I said, you know, what is it? So you do it really well, and he had a great record in Interleague and blah, blah, blah. And what do you think it gives the Pacific League? What is it about the pitching, or what do you think that gives them that edge? And he said, when you look at the record, are you not missing the obvious, that they're just better than we are?
I think I remember that.
That was what started getting me look. Well, what is the possibility of that? And I'm going, oh my gosh, he's right. So it's staring us in. It's been staring us in the face for years. But Japan is really the Pacific League's not really keen on bringing this one up. They don't like to laugh at the Central League because, you know, it's harder to do business with them in the back rooms that way. So they like to keep it on the down low.
All right. Well, the producer is looking us in the face right now and telling us we got to go. So we have one more question that we will hold over for next week.
Oh, no. That's a good one.
Thank you for the questions and the comments. I know it's a good one. So we're going to have to wait a week to get on that one. But you guys send us a question too by email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat@JBWPodcast, or go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Thanks a lot for all the great questions and comments. We appreciate them, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for listening.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.